Opinions were divided when this 80s horror flick sequel hit theaters, but the franchise demonstrated its unyielding commitment to advancing its storyline. While some fans appreciated the added complexity given to the unstoppable masked killer, others longed for the simplicity that made the original movie a timeless classic. As we witness the return of the mystifying Michael Myers, we are reminded of his baffling resilience having survived his supposed final confrontation in the previous flick. The Halloween season is once again plunged into terror as the Shape unleashes his wrath, but this time a mysterious and supernatural connection emerges between him and his young niece, Jamie Lloyd, adding layers to the horror as familial ties intertwine with the supernatural. So brace yourself as Charlie Cotter, Laramie Wells, and I once again return to the haunted Haddonfield, Illinois, to discuss Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers from 1989 on this episode of the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast.
Help me, help me.
We both know he's alive.
But you know where he is.
Halloween 5. This time, they're ready. This time, he's unmasked. And this time, he's back with a vengeance. Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers.
I'm Tim Williams, the mastermind behind the mic at the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. Joining me on each epic episode is a guest co-host who's as crazy about 80s flicks as they are about wearing parachute pants and solving Rubik's Cubes. We're diving into nostalgic treasures we saw at the local theater, rented on VHS tapes, or discovered on cable TV. From blockbusters that make you say,
I feel the need for speed.
To hidden gems that'll have you screaming,
they're here.
It's a blast to relive these old memories and share our thoughts on what made these movies so special. We reminisce about our first time watch experiences, share our favorite scenes, and even discover fascinating behind the scenes tales about the cast and crew along the way. Haven't hit that subscribe button yet? What are you waiting for?
Come on, do it.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. And hey, while you're at it, be a pal and drop us a written review along with a 5-star rating to tell us what you think about us.
The sportos, motorheads, geeks, sluts, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Take a day off and come hang out with us on social media. Just search 80s Flick Flashback on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And don't forget to bookmark 80sflickflashback.com for more gnarly content.
Get out of town. I didn't know you did anything creative.
Want to crank it all the way up to 11? Become a supporter on buymeacoffee.com for only $5 a month.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Click the link in our episode show notes, and while you're there, soak up the extra trivia and fun stuff that didn't make it into today's show. Thanks again for tuning in. Now, let's get right into today's episode.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Well, welcome in, everybody. Happy Halloween to everyone as we are at the end of October in our spooky season. So it feels right to do another Halloween movie. And unfortunately, fortunately, this is the last in the 80s Halloween movies. And boy, did we save the worst one so far. But I don't want to suffer alone. So I brought with me two great guest co-hosts who you know and you love, who love to talk horror movies in the 80s as well. So from Moving Panels Podcast, please welcome Mr. Laramie Wells. How you doing, Laramie?
I think I'm good. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I've watched.
Well, we'll talk about it. And as always, wonderful to have Mr. Charlie Cotter with us again. How you doing, Charlie?
I'm doing pretty good. I survived another Michael Myers movie. So
there you go.
I'm on top of the world.
Whew, fun times. All right, so let's...
Was it?
Well, no, I'm going to say we're going to have fun times.
That's my thing about slasher movies, is that even when they're bad, they're fun.
Yeah.
This movie didn't know that.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It's. Ooh, yeah, we got a lot to talk about. So let's jump in. When did you guys see Halloween 5 for the first time? I'll start with Charlie this time.
So I saw it for the first time about 10 years or so. I started going through all the Halloweens and Friday the 13th and watched it for the first time. And I have not watched it again since, other than getting prepared for this episode for obvious reasons.
Right, right. What about you, Laramie?
Almost very similar. Probably though 5 years.
Okay.
Maybe a little more than 5 years. But yeah, I got the full Halloween Blu-ray box set.
Okay.
With all 10 movies, including the Rob Zombie ones. And Bethany and I sat down to watch through them all. And I'm pretty sure that was the first time I had ever seen this one. But again, didn't watch it again for rightfully
obvious,
so.
Obvious
until,
reasons, yeah.
Yeah, until prepping for this episode.
Yeah, I want to say this is my first time seeing it all the way through. I think I had seen the beginning, like usually, like, you know, this time of year, AMC is going to play them all and they typically play them in sequence. So I remember watching the end of part four and then part five starting. And I think we watched, I had to, you know, watch the first 15 or 20 minutes of it because I remembered the beginning of the movie was seemed kind of fresh in my mind. Of her in the hospital and having the first seizure and all that kind of stuff. So, or whatever you call her fits of shaking and screaming because she can see where Michael is. But yeah, so.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah.
This might be a really short episode, but it's okay. All right. Well, let's jump into story origin and pre-production and then we'll find out why this movie is the way it is. But I think we already know, but. Development on a fifth Halloween was fast-tracked to meet a preset release deadline of October 13, 1989. Producer Mustafa Akkad turned to Halloween 4 writer and director Alan B. McElroy and Dwight H. Little to return to their respective duties on the fifth film. However, they both declined. Gee, I wonder why. Ramsey Thomas assumed producing responsibilities from the fourth film's Paul Freeman and opted to hire playwright Shem Bitterman as a screenwriter. Yeah. Playwright to screenwriter for a horror movie. That sounds like that'll work really well. But we'll keep going. In Bitterman's script, titled Halloween 5, The Killer Inside Me, which was written in 3 days, featured an evil Jamie Lloyd and resurrected Michael Myers once again. However, Akkad was adamant about making Myers the sole antagonist of the film, which totally contradicts how they left us in part 4. Because yeah. You assume that the whatever the evil was in Michael was transferred to Jamie. Nevertheless, Bitterman penned a second draft by February of 89, and Jeff Burr, director of From a Whisper to a Scream, was being courted to helm the film. Burr's producing partners, Darren Scott and William Burr, were also in the mix to co-produce alongside Thomas. The directing job was seemingly Burr's until series co-creator Deborah Hill met director Dominique Othen-Garrard at the 1989 Sundance Film Festival and recommended him to Akkad. So we've got a Sundance Film Festival director coming to Halloween. So after being instated as director, he infamously threw Bitterman's draft into a trash can in front of Akkad. He brought in Robert Harters of Home Movies to write an entirely new draft, which saw a Frankenstein-inspired story where Myers is resurrected and no longer evil, but is pursued by an angry mob. Boy, that angry mob came back with a vengeance here recently. But anyway, Harder's pitch was rejected, leading Othen-Garrard to pitch a new concept with co-writer Michael Jacobs. The duo's initial title was, these titles get me, Halloween 5 and Things That Go Bump in the Night. After reviewing the screenplay, the director added Jamie's inability to speak to the draft, along with the supernatural plot device of her telepathic visions connected to Michael. Another departure from previous films in the series was the director's attempt to persuade the audience to relate to Michael Myers, who he intended to appear, quote-unquote, more human, even vulnerable, with contradicting feelings inside of him. He illustrated these feelings with a scene where Michael removes his mask and sheds a tear. Gerard explains, again, to humanize him, to give him a tear, if evil, or in this case, our boogeyman knows pain or love or demonstrate a feeling of regret, he becomes even more scary to me if he pursues his action. He shows an evil determination beyond his feelings. Dr. Loomis tries to reach his emotional side several times in Halloween 5. He thinks he can cure Michael through his feelings. That explanation helps me understand some of the choices in this movie and why they were completely wrong for this movie.
It makes me want to see what some of those other movies would have turned into if this one was as that was the best option.
Right.
It's still awful.
Well, the crazy thing is, and I'm going to say spoiler alert for Halloween Ends, it almost sounds like they brought back the idea they were maybe planning for Jamie with Corey. Halloween Ends.
Yeah, it seems like some of the things that didn't make it seem to kind of trickle their way into the newer sequels that we got here recently, like the mob chasing after him, that kind of stuff. But yeah, the Frankenstein story, I did read another trivia thing where they gave a little bit more information about that one, where it was like it was the beginning of the movie was a big thunderstorm, and the thunderstorm is what brought Michael back to life. And
isn't that Friday the 13th part 6? Yeah,
exactly. Okay. And then him and Jamie then become like, there's this telepathic thing, but they're talking to each other and helping each other, which once again goes kind of the newer sequel where Michael gets an apprentice, you'd say. Yeah. So yeah, it's just weird. But the titles were my favorite part of those: Halloween and Things That Go Bump in the Night, or The Killer Inside Me.
Which is wrong when you're talking about a 10-year-old girl.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing. One of those, I think the Frankenstein one was, it was going to be 10 years later. And so it was going to be a teenage Jamie, but Akkad said he couldn't do it because he'd already promised Danielle Harris that she could come back for the next installment. And so, yeah,
we really want you back. We don't want you to talk.
Yeah. But
we'd love to have you back.
Yeah. What a horrifying experience for her to make this movie. Cause just about every scene, we want you to shake and scream and cry in pretty much every scene of this movie, and just be terrorized for every scene that you're in.
Until the last 30 minutes when all of a sudden you can talk now.
Yep, right, totally. Right. Yeah.
You saw your stepsister's friend and had all of a sudden switched your vocal cords on.
Right.
Okay, you just said stepsister. And then there's a part in the movie where Loomis, I believe, says stepmother. They weren't his step. They were foster, right? Am I? Because I did not go back and watch the fourth one. So
I don't think they were sisters. Or I thought she was like a niece, or she was a cousin. Because I was thinking that she came from another family and was staying with them.
Well, that's what I was thinking, that it was a foster mother that.
Right.
Jamie had tried to kill at the end.
Or she was the daughter of the father or the mother. Yeah, it was stepson. Like, they were a new couple. I don't remember. Go ahead, Charlie.
I think that in Return, in Halloween 4, they're referred to as foster, but in this one they're referred to as step.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's where I was confused, because I could have swore it was foster.
I think it was a little retcon.
Maybe.
Oh, which these Halloween movies love to do. There are three continuities with these Halloween movies. You're not even going to get to finish this one because the sixth movie came out in the 90s.
Yeah, like 95. Like, it wasn't even like a year or two later. It was much later, which is why I didn't even realize there was a part 6 until I was doing the research for this one. All right, let's talk about this real fast. So in the original closing scene, after Jamie finds that Michael has escaped from the police station, she is approached by a black cloaked figure. At the time of filming, it was still unknown who this figure was. It would only be expanded on and explained in the subsequent film, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, in 1995. And the scene in question was attached to the beginning of the producer's cut of that film as a flashback. Though the cuts made it to the beginning and ending of the film largely diminished the subplot, the man in black character still appears momentarily on several occasions in the film, which led to some confusion among audiences upon its original release. I'm still confused.
Yeah. Yeah, they show him getting off the bus.
Right.
And then you've got this silhouette mowing down the police. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you see him kind of walking around in a few shots. And like, I'm expecting like some big payoff at the end. So then when you see him going into the police station, I'm like, okay, I'm hoping to see this one-on-one confrontation. And me and Charlie were joking about earlier, like he was going to be like the long lost brother of Michael or like some other sibling that, you know, you talk to me telepathically. Yeah. Yeah. Why not? I mean, you know, the sibling part, I mean, they've been doing that since Halloween too. So I might as well keep that part going. But
yeah, it definitely, it does get explained in Curse of Michael. Okay. So I guess there is a payoff, but I heard that,
is it though?
Well, it's not a good payoff, but you do learn why he's there, what he is, stuff like that. But I heard that they added the Man in Black is mm-hmm. his actual name or whatever,
right?
Just to fix plot holes in this movie. And then when they made the sixth one, they had to reincorporate that character to explain why he was there in the first place.
Good old retcon again.
Mm-hmm.
And now, these messages.
Are you a fan of movies and TV shows inspired by comics? Ready for a podcast that dives deep into the thrilling world of adaptations? Well, look no further. Welcome to Moving Panels, the podcast where we discuss movies and TV shows based on, inspired by, and adapted from the world of comic books. This is your go-to podcast for all things comics on screen. I'm your host, Laramie Wells, and every Monday, we explore the dynamic universe where ink meets action. We break down the classics, reveal hidden gems, and uncover the creative process behind your favorite adaptations. Subscribe to Moving Panels now on your favorite podcast platform and join us on this epic journey through the pages of comics and onto the big screen. Remember, new episodes drop every Monday. Don't miss out. Moving Panels, where every panel has a story and every adaptation is a blockbuster. Subscribe today. I'll see you on the other side of the page.
Hey there, fellow 80s movie aficionados. Are you ready to embark on a nostalgia-filled journey to the greatest era of cinema? Then look no further than the Retro Life for You 80s Movie Podcast. Join us every week as we rewind the VHS tape, dust off those Betamax classics, and dive headfirst into the neon-soaked, totally tubular world of the 1980s movie. The Brat Pack to action heroes. We've got it all covered. Breakfast Club, Ghostbusters, E.T. and Indiana Jones, and more. It's like a trip in Doc Brown's time machine, but without the DeLorean. So whether you're a diehard 80s film buff or just curious about the cinematic gems of the past, Retro Life for You is your ticket to the ultimate movie time warp. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Retro Life for You. And we can be found anywhere you listen to your podcast, as well as on our website, www.retrolife4u.com.
All right, well, let's talk about casting. And this will be very quick because most of the cast is returning from the last movie and the other ones aren't really worth mentioning. So here we go. Returning from Halloween 4 was Donald Pleasance as Dr. Sam Loomis. And boy, I can't wait to talk about him here in a few minutes. Along with Danielle Harris, Ellie Cornell, and Bo Starr as Jamie Lloyd, Rachel Carruthers, and Sheriff Ben Meeker, respectively. Though enthusiastic of reprising her role as Rachel, Cornell was disappointed to learn that her character would be killed early in the film. In the original screenplay, her character died after Michael shoved a pair of scissors down her throat, but Cornell felt this would be too gruesome and requested the writers change it. As a result, she's instead stabbed in the chest. You know,
I was about to say she was still stabbed with scissors.
Right. And then Karen Alston, who portrayed Darlene Carruthers in the previous film, the stepmom, foster mom, reprised her role in the beginning of the film, showing the anonymous person in the mask stabbing her as she falls into the bathtub. Her voiceover was recorded by Wendy Kaplan, and Kaplan is the one who actually played the role of Tina Williams, the loud and wily friend of Rachel's.
Okay.
We won't talk about Wendy Kaplan because she had really no other acting credits besides this movie. I mean, she did a few things, but nothing nothing major, but she did look somewhat familiar. Like I felt like I'd seen her in other things. Maybe she just kind of had that face that made you think she'd been in other things. But I was disappointed that Rachel was killed off early in the movie, because, you know, they had a good dynamic from the end of part four. So I was expecting that to kind of continue in part five, but
this movie's already ripping so much off from the Friday the 13th movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
You kill Alice in the first 10 minutes of Friday the 13th part two. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It was mainly just frustrating as far as a story point, because she was the final girl.
Yeah.
She was making these, you know, jumping on the roof and saving her sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes, and after she already knows that Michael was in the house earlier, she goes back in and she's just chilling.
Yeah.
Okay. This is, I hate that they killed her off, because she was the best character in the,
She was actually, I really agree. I think she was a stronger character than, was it Rachel?
Tina,
Tina and Samantha, the two other girls that we get later on. So
Samantha wasn't a character.
Yeah. she was a body count later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Samantha was a victim. That's awesome.
Well, that was the thing. Like, why introduce two new characters that
to kill them?
So, which, you know, go back to our Friday the 13th part five episode a couple weeks ago, and you know, we know how that turned out, where you have a producer that says I want to kill every 8 minutes, so you just keep introducing new characters to kill them off 5 minutes later. So you lose count of who's who and why they're even in this movie. But back to this one. So we'll talk about Tamara Glenn, who played Samantha. She began her career as a teenager in the late 80s, appearing in TV shows such as Miami Vice and Growing Pains, before becoming known for her horror roles in this movie, as well as an episode of Freddy's Nightmares. And she also had a cameo role as a mother in the slasher film Terrifier 2, featuring horror icons Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, and Art the Clown of the Terrifier franchise.
I haven't seen Terrifier 2 yet. I'm going to have to keep my eye out for her when I see that.
And then we'll mention Don Shanks, who actually played Michael Myers, and he played the Man in Black, because they had him film both parts of that. George P. Wilbur, who had portrayed the Shape in the previous film, did not express interest in returning to play the role, but he did work as a stunt player in this movie. Don Shanks was cast to play the speechless white-masked murderer. Shanks had already played a similar character in the first two Silent Night, Deadly Night films. Shanks also had a double role as the Man in Black. Wilbur, who had to wear hockey pads to appear to have a bigger build, would later portray the Shape again in the next installment, Halloween 6. Shanks did not have to wear the hockey pads because he already had a larger build. Same thing with Michael Myers and Jason, with different people playing them. They always either look bigger, smaller, more padded.
Taller, shorter.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
So was it actually Don Shanks when Michael takes the mask off?
I think so, yeah.
Because you almost actually get to see him.
Yeah. Which I thought was interesting, because it looked like he looked very young. Like, he didn't seem to be an older person, which I expected him to look like. But it's, you know, it's kind of hard to see, but he looked younger than I thought he was going to look. I'm trying to remember what his age should be at this point.
The first one was in 79, and he's supposed to be 20, 21. So if this one is 10 years later, he should be 30.
30, yeah.
So the events when he was a kid, murdered his sister, was 1963, and he was 6 years old.
Okay.
So if the question is this supposed to be 1989?
Nine.
It is, because it starts off the movie with, and when it shows the flashback, it says
1 year later,
Halloween 1980.
Which can we talk about that? Because I have some issues with that.
Go for it.
It's been 1 year. That old man just left Michael laying on that slab for a whole year. Just a body laying on that slab. And
it took him a whole year to recover. The spirit of Halloween had to come and bring him back fully, because it always has to happen on Halloween or Halloween Eve, right?
Yeah.
What else are you supposed to do with the bodies that just wash up on your house?
I have an interesting note about that, so I'll jump down here.
By the way, quick little math. Yeah. If this was supposed to be 1989, Michael should have been about 32.
Okay.
32 is not old.
I don't know why I thought he would be older, but so the old hermit from the opening scene was originally scripted as a younger man named Dr. Death, who had a fascination with the occult. His shack was supposed to be filled with ancient ruins and tablets, and he attempted to bring Michael back to life after finding him. The scene was filmed and can be seen in the documentary Inside Halloween 5 that came out in 2000. But yeah, there was a little bit that I read a little bit more about that character, where there's supposed to be more to that story than we actually saw.
It's supposed to be a lot more with like a cult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had been attempting to try to bring Michael back from the dead, is what it seemed like. And then all of a sudden, a year later, he sits up, finds his mask perfectly placed just above his head where he can grab it, and we don't see his face. So,
well, that's the thing. Did Jamie, with her little twitching, did she wake him up? Because she twitches in the bed, and then he
right.
twitches, and that's when she starts like acting out the same thing he's doing. So did Jamie's spirit, I guess, is that what woke him up?
The supernatural telekinetic powers.
So you mean like Friday the 13th Part 7, Blood, where the girl with the telekinetic abilities accidentally wakes up Jason?
Yeah, whoops.
Well, that had already come out. Man,
they stole so much.
Oh, yeah. I was saying that came out before this one, so it's very possible.
That was 88.
Yep. There you go. All right, the only other person in the cast I'll mention, and he's the traditional that guy we always find in these movies, and that's a name that I wouldn't recognize, but I definitely recognize his face. Troy Evans as Deputy Charlie. Good name there, Charlie. He's best known for his role as desk clerk Francis Frank Martin in the television series ER, and more recently for his role as Detective Johnson in Amazon TV series Bosch. He's also appeared in Ace Ventura.
Under
Siege, Teen Wolf, Cuffs, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Demolition Man, The Frighteners, Tiger Cruise, View from the Top, and Article 99, among others. His filmography is very long. But yeah, as soon as I saw him as the deputy, I was like, I know that guy. But yeah, Ace Ventura for sure. Teen Wolf, I remember him in Teen Wolf. And I definitely remember him from ER. So
I'm a big Frighteners fan. So I'll
say yeah. That. Frighteners is great. That is a totally underrated movie for sure. I rewatched that one, I think, last year because I hadn't seen it in a long time. Good old Peter Jackson, pre-Lord of the Rings fame. All right, well, let's talk a little. I want to talk about Dr. Loomis before we get into iconic scenes. Did anybody else think that Dr. Loomis was going to become like the villain? Did he seem more terrorizing than Michael through most of this movie, or was it just me?
I was more afraid of him. yeah. Mannerisms and language and all that other thing, but I didn't think that he was going to become the bad guy. I thought if anything they were going to go back to Halloween 4 and have Jamie do it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of snaps back into her little mute state because that's what Michael's always been.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just decided to ruin it in the last 20 minutes.
I don't know, he goes from being this character in the first couple of movies that he's truly trying to help to in these movies, he's turned into Wile E. Coyote. Like,
yeah. Yeah. He's so
especially with the net. He responded to Michael on this net. One.
Yeah. Yeah. The net was an interesting twist. I was like, oh, okay.
Sign above it.
Yeah. Acme nets. Yes. But yeah, I like about halfway through the movie, I was like, he's traumatizing Jamie almost more than Michael is by he's always screaming at her and like, you've got to tell me where he is. And like, just the whole,
know where he is.
Yes. I was like, gosh, can you just take it down a few notches? I felt like he was going crazy in the whole process, which would have been its own interesting plot twist, I guess. But it didn't need any more twists at this point, I don't think. But he said he was very vocal about his dissatisfaction with the story and the way that the director was trying to get him to play Dr. Loomis as totally heavy and overbearing. Pleasance also felt that his success and the shock ending of Halloween 4 was not being capitalized on, citing that Jamie should have been portrayed as all evil after stabbing her stepmother. We all agree. Akkad, though, disagreed, thinking the fans wanted to see more of the shape. In an interview, Danielle Harris explained that she thought of the idea. She said, the way Halloween 4 ended, I thought I was going to be the killer. I thought it would have been fun to come back as the killer or even as Michael's sidekick. Scary, but fun.
Yeah. I don't know if they could have done that with her at the age she was.
Yeah. I think that had a lot to do with it. Because there's actually a scene where she got stabbed in the leg in that scene where she's in the, she's caught dumb in waiter. The dumbwaiter or the laundry chute. Yeah. And they said that they were actually going to give it an X rating because of him actually, stabbing a 10-year-old. That was too traumatic. And so they ended up removing that shot.
Crazy how far we've come, because in the new Halloweens, he definitely kills a kid.
Yeah. A couple of them. Yeah.
But I think what both of them said is correct. I much rather would have seen a Jamie is the new shape.
Mm-hmm.
I think they missed their opportunity, but I also get having a 10-year-old as the murderer. But yeah. I think kind of cool, hopefully they probably would have started stealing storylines from Chucky, but at least you get a little bit a different view there.
They're still stealing from Friday the 13th, because at the end of part 4, the final chapter, it's led to believe that Tommy Jarvis is going to be the new killer.
Right.
And then they come back in part 5, which you just covered, and they go a completely different route.
Yeah. Nobody wants to stick with how they ended the movie. They didn't know how this franchise thing really works. They were just, by the time this comes out, they'll forget what happened in the last one. It won't matter.
Yeah. But I do also agree with the producer on this one, though, is I want to see Michael killing. I want to see Michael doing what Michael does best. Yeah. So I can see the back and forth. I think both of them would have been a decent story.
Mm-hmm.
But instead we got whatever this was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we don't even get a lot of murders in this one.
No, not really. Not as many as the other ones.
And there's the two, two Barney Fife cops that they get murdered off screen.
Right. So right.
We don't even get the thrill of, some cool death scene there.
Yeah. A 20-25 minute break between some of the kills, between Mikey, Tina's boyfriend, and then is Spence when they're in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
25, almost 30 minute break between kills.
So here's the thing about, lots of movies, screenwriting 101, maybe. Do you really want to name a character Michael?
Right. Yeah.
Was it for the joke because he dressed as Michael?
Right, right. Yeah. It took me a second when she kept saying, "Come on, Michael, Michael." I was like, "Wait a minute, do you know who's on there?" I was like, "No." Yeah. Oh, the boyfriend's name is Michael. Like, who thought that was a good idea?
Such a funny, funny joke.
Right, right.
And I will also bring in the other guy, the guy straight out of the 50s in this late 80s movie. him. With the mask that I guess Tina had gave him to wear, and then Michael puts it on, which is the goofiest thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, not only stealing from Friday the 13th, with the whole origin of the hockey mask, but also stealing from your own movie when Michael did it with the ghost outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Except at least while he was wearing the ghost outfit, he murdered someone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one, he just looks awkwardly at Tina while he has all this time in the world.
Yeah, why is he driving her around? Like, what? Yeah, this is only the second movie, I think they said, where he actually drives a vehicle.
Yeah.
He hadn't driven a vehicle since the first one.
Yeah, he did in the first one.
Yeah, which was always a big question. How did he know how to drive?
Where did he learn how to drive?
He's been in the sane asylum for 10 years.
After he's been escaping all this time, he just goes to the demolition derby park.
All right, well, let's talk about iconic scenes. Favorite scenes? Are there any in this movie? I don't think there's really an iconic scene in this one. Nothing stood out as being iconic to me.
I think the most iconic scene is just the chase scene at the end, which is actually, I think, very good.
Mm-hmm.
The whole laundry chute, I think it's very suspenseful, and I think they pull it off very well. That's probably the only memorable scene.
Yeah, you brought a good point. I think watching this one, it felt more like it was trying to be more of a suspense thriller than the slasher that we expected it to be, and the others really are. And like you said, that the long time between kills gives it more of that. They're trying to build all this tension between where it's not just, you know, one after the other kind of a thing. And there's really no, I guess, the party scene with the cops and the, you know, the couple in the barn. That's the only time that he like does multiple kills in one area, where in the other movies, there's always that one house, or where, you know, he ends up, you know, storing the bodies in one place and they all fall out or get hung up or
which,
you know,
shown. They tried to have that moment in this movie.
Yeah. With the two bodies falling out of the barn when she sits on the hay or whatever.
Well, no, I'm talking about when Jamie goes up into the attic and you've got Max, the dog.
Oh yeah.
Body.
Yeah.
And then I don't even know who the other body was. The other body supposed to be that first.
Yeah. One's the sister and one's the awful boyfriend.
Yeah. The boyfriend, that was it.
Right. Oh, yeah. Mike. He was disguising himself as.
Wait, which Mike? Exactly. No.
Yeah. Which, that's the other thing. Like, is Michael, because he murdered that guy somewhere completely distant. Like, this wasn't like in the first movie where he's killing people in one house and just taking them next door. Mm-hmm. Like, he had to transport this body.
He was in the trunk of the car, probably. Yeah. It's always the trunk, right?
Yeah, and don't get me again on the mimicking Jason with the killing the two making out or having sex in the hay, you know.
Yeah.
With a pitchfork and a scythe, and he's just ripping Jason off again.
Yep.
That's like one way they didn't rip Jason off, or at least not yet in this timeline, is Michael looked like an alien in his little mask.
Yeah.
Especially when Loomis is sitting there trying to reason with him at the very end. And they're holding the knife and he's, you know, like 6 inches taller than Loomis. And he's like looking up to the left and right. He looks like an alien.
I love that he's holding the knife like up at his shoulder, even when he's like a whole floor above Loomis. He's just standing there holding it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. What are you doing, Michael? Like, you're just posing.
Right.
Man, this movie's bad.
Yeah.
This movie's bad.
This has been painful to really talk about because it's
because again, are there bad Friday the 13th movies?
Yes.
But are they still enjoyable to watch? Yes. Are Most there bad them, yes. Nightmare on Elm Street movies? Yes.
Yes.
But are they still enjoyable to watch?
Yes.
This one's not enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, this one's pretty terrible. I really shot myself in the foot this holiday choosing this one and Friday the 13th Part 5 back to back. It's like, yeah, it's like we've got to go watch something good after this one to kind of cleanse our palate to start afresh. But
it's even bad with the quote unquote storytelling, because especially at the end of the movie, there's just so many coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
It's just frustrating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Through the woods, and Mike's in the car trying to run over people, and then all of a sudden Loomis is there.
Yeah, he pops up out of nowhere
there with the entire police force. And then while they're at the house, someone calls and says that there's an emergency at the children's clinic, and then every cop there, knowing that Michael's coming, every cop heads to the clinic.
It's just like,
because even after they leave, Loomis goes, "All right, come on, Michael."
Yeah. I knew it was all a trap.
Can either one of y'all tell me what happened to Billy?
Who's Billy?
Yeah.
Billy? the other little kid, Jamie's
friend. Oh, yeah.
What happened to Billy? I need to know.
I think he got left in the woods.
Yeah.
You mean after he got hit by the car?
I was about to say, did Michael kill him when he hit him with the car?
No,
because he shows up right after that.
Yeah.
That's right.
One of my favorite scenes is when the mute Jamie and the stutterer Billy are trying to communicate what Jamie and Loomis is just sitting there screaming at them both.
Right.
Hey. So.
Oh, I absolutely love when Loomis just apparently has a heart attack or a stroke while he's in the process of taking out Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be his original death. And then they changed it with.
And they decided to make a part 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think he said in an interview before this one came out that he was going to die. He was supposed to die in this one. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up changing it. Yeah.
And made part six in which Donald Pleasance actually died.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Pleasance died the same year that six came out.
Yeah, he died before its actual release.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's.
What are the trivia you got? I'm trying to lighten something up here.
All right, so I mentioned this earlier, so I'll go ahead and let me say this first. So despite the subtitle The Revenge of Michael Myers, which appears on all covers and posters, does not appear in the actual film. It only says Halloween 5 and not and I didn't realize, I kept thinking that this one was called Curse of Michael Myers, not The Revenge of Michael Myers. No. It doesn't really fit. So I mentioned earlier the Jamie Lloyd character has a striking parallel to the Tommy Jarvis character from the Friday the 13th series. Both characters appeared in the fourth, fifth, and sixth films of their respective series. They were both about the same age in their first appearance. They both become institutionalized and develop homicidal tendencies themselves after the killer.
But they age Tommy.
Yeah, they age. Well, they did. Yeah. That wasn't intentional. That was only because Corey Feldman couldn't be in it because of being a part of Goonies.
Yeah, but it worked better to make him.
It did. Yeah.
Make him a teenager in the second appearance.
Yeah, so Jamie starts out as a mute in the fifth Friday the 13th. Tommy rarely speaks. At the end of that film, Tommy is seen holding a knife and essentially becoming Jason. At the end of the previous Halloween, Jamie is seen holding a pair of scissors, and she essentially becomes Michael, or at least that's what they wanted us to believe. So interesting that I did not plan for these. I didn't know that putting these two movies back-to-back on my schedule. So just kind of, and really just kind of fell that way because these were the next in the series of the franchises. As we were going. So, all right.
Should have done Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, I got to get back to that one. Definitely. I need some Dream Warriors in my life.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, no, that's
A fun one.
That's like the best one of the
like the first best one. Kills. You want some iconic scenes? There you go.
Yeah. So we'll all be back together for that episode. We'll do that one next year. all right. So Don Shanks, who was playing Michael in The Shape, was injured when he was filming the scene where The Shape crashes Mike's Camaro into the tree. The director forgot to yell cut, and fire was beginning to emerge from the car. Shanks, who was not wearing flame-retardant clothing, claims that he was told not to leave the totaled automobile until the director said cut and decided to stay inside the vehicle for about a minute because the director had not done so. Shanks put this down.
Shanks is just sitting there going, y'all smell something?
Right. He says he thinks this because the director was sidetracked by seeing stunts take place during his first major directing job. It turns out he was so shocked by the realism of the wreck that he forgot to shout cut. It was finally stunt coordinator Don Pike who told the director to yell cut and did so just in time for Shanks to leave the wreckage. So I mentioned earlier, the film had been fighting an X rating with violence, blood, and gore. Some scenes were trimmed down to keep it rated R, including a shot of Mike, not Michael Myers, quivering on the ground after Michael Myers, not the other Mike that he killed, stabs him in the head with a hand rake. There's a shot of glass embedded in Officer Eddie's face after Michael punches through the windshield, and Billy's leg being hit by the Camaro, and the scythe that kills Samantha was originally supposed to go through her forehead.
I would have much preferred those deaths.
Right.
I mean, come on. You've got the original Friday the 13th where you got this awesome effect of the arrow coming up through Kevin Bacon's neck.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some great visuals out there, and you're going to take a movie in 1989. I mean, come on. Temple of Doom had someone ripping someone's heart out.
Right, and that was PG, they even had PG-13. That was
before PG-13, but right. But still, like...
Yeah.
It would have made the deaths a lot... Again, made it more fun if we actually get to see some of this. I sound sadistic saying all of this. I'm just going to point that out.
But that was the same issue we had with part five. Like they did the same thing with Friday the 13th part five was they kept cutting. They cut it so much. And when you even watching the theatrical version, it feels like a made for TV movie because most of the deaths are off screen or below camera where nothing was really, really shown. So it did lose some of its effect that way.
I was going to say Mikey's kill was actually fairly decent. It did have very Friday the 13th-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty brutal. But yeah, I'm pretty sure the version I watched was made for TV because I watched some scenes later, that I definitely did not see while I was watching it. So there were The version I watched probably could have just been PG.
And now these messages.
What seems to be the problem, pal?
There's just so much pain in the world, so many issues. I don't think I can bear it.
Well, friendo, it sounds like you could use a dose of Pop Culture Roulette.
Pop Culture Roulette? What's that? Some sort of pop culture themed podcast or something?
That's right, sonny boy. When hope seems far, dive into some PCR.
But I already get my entertainment news from Variety.
Huh, that's pretty good. If you're a chucklehead, PCR gives you news you need, condensed, unfiltered, and raw, from three nerds who know a little something about something.
Wow, okay, sign me up.
That's the spirit. Pop Culture Roulette. New episodes every Monday, available on all major podcast directories.
But that's all the trivia I got, so we'll jump into box office and critical reception and...
It was bad.
Yeah.
Good enough to make a sixth one, though.
Right. They had to.
6 years later, but...
Yeah, yeah. So Halloween 5 opened theatrically on October 13th, Friday, October 13th, 1989. It earned $5.1 million in its opening weekend, ranking number two at the U.S. box office behind Look Who's Talking in its first week as well. It continued to screen throughout November and with a reported earning of $449,000 during the weekend of November 3rd, showing on 537 screens. Not a very big release, it seems. The film's theatrical run lasted about 3 months, concluding in December with an ultimate gross of $11.6 million domestically. I think they said this was the sequel that made the least amount of money up to that point. So,
Yucky.
Yeah. So Rotten Tomatoes has it at 11% on the tomato meter with a 36% audience score. IMDb is 4.9 out of 10 with viewers and a big old 28 on Metacritic.
Wow. 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's crazy.
Yeah. Accurate.
I mean, I always hate giving movies that low of a rating.
Yeah.
This one's bad.
Yeah.
I also hate Rotten Tomato, but yeah, this one's pretty bad.
Yeah. I don't think it's that low. I mean, I don't really grade anything that low. Anything I grade that low, something I haven't even finished. Like I finished watching this one. It was,
yeah, I will say I never not finish a movie.
Okay.
I will suffer through it. I never not finish a movie. But yeah, out of 10, if I were to rank this, I don't know. I'd probably 5 would probably be the highest I could.
Yeah, that's where I put it. It's a 5 out of 10 for me, which is pretty much like a D minus or an F if you're giving it a letter grade.
Oh, as a teacher, I'm failing this.
You agree, Charlie?
100%. Yeah. Okay. Needs to go back and get some extra credit somewhere.
No, it needs to repeat. And that's exactly, they did one more movie and then they just decided, we're just going to wipe the slate clean. And
it would have got an F for cheating because it just stole from too many other better movies, better stories. Not that Friday the 13th was much better, but somewhat better.
But it was more fun. I want to make that clear.
Yes.
I'm not saying that Friday the 13th part 5 or part 7, which is the other one that it stole a lot from. I'm not going to say they're good, but they're more fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't feel like it's a chore watching it. Mm-hmm. This one almost felt like a chore.
This one didn't have the same fun that you expect from these type of movies. Yeah, I agree with that. All right, we're going to wrap this one up. I think it might be my shortest episode ever. Even with two co-hosts, we didn't have enough to talk about. But I mean, I think we've
heard everything.
Yeah. There's nothing that there was nothing I really loved about the movie. I think, the best sequences really, even though the whole tone of the movie changed at the end, like I think with like Charlie saying, the laundry chute scene was good tension. The chase scene at the end was good tension, but it took so long to get there and everything that they did up to that point was just so all over the place. It didn't have the effect it needed to have. But then I think they were still trying to add those typical slasher elements to a thriller that the director was obviously trying to make at the beginning of the movie.
So I just got reminded of this while you were talking.
Okay.
When they first introduce us to Deputy Ross and Deputy Farah, the two bumbling
cops.
Was it just me, or is there like almost like little dip 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 music playing in the background?
Yes.
Like vaudeville.
Yes.
Which it, completely dissociated it from being a horror movie.
Yeah. I actually think I muted the TV because I thought it was music playing somewhere else and I could just I heard it. Nope. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody made that conscious decision.
Yeah.
And they do it later on. He like, oh yeah, we're not good cops, like 30 minutes later, and he like shoulder and it does another little whistle.
Yeah. Boing, boing, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
The characters in this movie are pretty awful.
Yes.
Tina, the Rachel's friend, like they took out the best character.
Right.
Other main character doesn't talk for half the movie. Then your other main character, Loomis, is a psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Your other main character is Tina, Rachel's friend, and she's annoying the whole movie.
I love how she, you know, she gets to the clinic and and Jamie's finally speaking. She was like, say it again. And it's,
right,
it's
a right.
sweet moment. She was right. like, all right, I got to peace out. I got a party to go to.
Yeah. While she's like freaking out, bawling her eyes out on the bed. She's like, oh, sorry.
Right, right.
I don't think you understand. I have to go to this party.
Right. And I didn't understand why there was a, I mean, I know it's Halloween for the costume party, but why was, you know, did anybody else think that Jamie was going to fall from the top of the platform where she was standing when she starts having her little breakdown? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Definitely
started falling back.
And then I was like,
I also, if you live in Haddonfield, Illinois, is dressing up like Mike Myers really a good idea?
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that would be illegal to do in that town. Like he should have been arrested right then by the cops.
I would have just shot him for cause. Like it, I mean, I'm pretty sure in some movie, some sheriff gave, you know, shoot first, ask questions later.
Right. Right.
When it came to Mike Myers,
this was the '80s after all. That was pretty common back then. But anyway, you were going to say, Charlie,
I was just going to say that it's almost like he was asking for it. I mean, you're taking two young girls. You have the exact same outfit on that he wasn't wearing. That wasn't his costume at the party. He changed that.
Right.
And he
was wielding a knife, which couldn't tell if it was fake or not.
And then you have doofus cops that you're running right at. So, I mean, it's almost like he was doing it on purpose, which even takes more away from the story and the characters. Yeah.
Yep, like, that is exactly, I think, the sound I made when this movie ended.
Yes, and then how it ended was so, I mean, yeah, she comes and finds just like smoke and people dead in the jail and gone. And like, that's it. That's the end of the movie. We'll see you in 6 years. All right.
I will say the other thing that I actually did like about this movie, if you can get past a few things, is the beginning when he escapes. It actually makes sense. If you can escape the fact that there's like a mine shaft in a graveyard hooked up to a river system, it makes sense that he falls and then the river sweeps him away and then he's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
The other movies where, like in 2, you know, he gets blown up in a hospital fire and he's fine.
Right.
First one, he's just disappears. He just gets up and walks away and they just don't see him. And he's just gone for a year. He's like, I'll try again next year. This one, at least, okay. He gets swept away. They don't know where he is. He's in some random mountain man's house. It at least kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Now, again, I didn't go back and watch 4, but as you talked about that, it reminded me of something else. Does he not Dracula raise up at the beginning there when he falls down? Like, I'm not talking about the Mike Myers traditional sit-up, you know, the Undertaker sit-up. I'm talking about, like, flat, he just straight up to his feet, like Dracula coming out of his coffin. Is that not how Mike rose up right before he's blown away by the cops?
I don't remember. I don't
think so. I'm pretty sure he... I might need to see it.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he...
We'll go back to the tape after we record.
Yeah. It's this typical sit-up, and then he off screen, or like, I think it's actually behind Jamie's head is when he stands up, but I don't know that for a fact. Yeah. With the way these movies go, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was pretty much, they just replayed the end of 4 at the beginning of 5, and up until that point where he's... Yeah, like you said, he goes under the into the mine shaft and then out into the water. Okay, Can we finish now? Is everybody saying what they're going to say?
Again, that's what Mike kept saying while I was watching this movie. Can it finish now?
Can we finish now? All right. Well, thanks, guys, so much for being a part.
But wait, one more thing. Let's keep the conversation going, like the spirit keeps going. Let's bring it back for another.
Don't worry. I'll just end the episode with just like complete silence and just until they like this movie did. It'll just fade to black. All right. Well, let's. Larry, you got anything coming up on moving panels you want to talk about?
I've wrapped up most of my Halloween episodes. I do have a one shot coming up right before Halloween, where you will actually be joining me for that one. To talk about what candies we think superheroes would like. So just a fun little conversation.
And yeah, then that's gonna be a good one.
Yeah, and then I'm excited to get into. I know I got November, but getting into the Christmas episodes. That's what. Always excited about those.
Always fun. Charlie hasn't started a podcast yet, so he doesn't have anything to plug. But
nothing to plug except my favorite holiday is coming up. Halloween's my favorite, so yeah. I'm excited for this holiday season.
So, all right. So, since you don't have anything to plug, I'll ask you this question. So, give us your top five go to every Halloween movies that you have to watch. What's on your top five?
Oh man, so
and they don't have to be 80s. You can be any of them.
Yeah, so Halloween 1, then I even like the Halloween 2018. That one's, I think that's a really good reboot.
Yeah, everything after it failed miserably, but the first one was good.
Yes, Alien, love Alien.
Okay.
The Thing.
The Thing is great.
Good one.
And then I'll put a Friday the 13th in there. I really love Friday the 13th. I really like 2 and 3. 2 and 3 are the best, in my opinion. And then
even with all the gimmicks of 3, because they did it in 3D.
Well, that's incredibly annoying. But I think it's the most relatable. It's the most realistic, air quotes realistic. It makes the most sense. Yeah, the 3D is incredibly frustrating. Yeah. But yeah, those are some of my top Halloween movies.
The 3 is iconic because it's the first time he wears the mask, so that it has to go in the it has to get some points for that to make the list for sure.
Oh yeah.
So Larry, you got a top five? I'll give you the same question if you were thinking about it.
I honestly, I don't think I do. Okay. I'm such a big horror movie guy. Like, it's just whatever I'm in the mood for.
Yeah.
You know, but I will put, you know, the classics like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street out there. Evil Dead.
Yeah, that's really
big. I mean, I'm a huge Evil Dead fan. So
that
out there. But I mean, even just watching something like the original Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that's a great Halloween, you know, scary movie. But I mean, every Halloween, I look for those ones that you just had never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And I will just plug this one really quick. I've just stumbled on one actually today called Circle. That was on Netflix. Apparently came out in like 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an independent movie, but it is, I'm not going to say it's necessarily scary, but it's very suspenseful. And man, has it got a twisted ending. So, but yeah, that, I mean, I'm always looking for just something different.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I have any go-tos every year, but I'm always, because like I said, it's well known, well documented on this show that I've done a big horror fan growing up. So a lot of them I haven't seen, especially from the 80s. Like I watched a lot of the Friday the 13th movies. Most of my stuff was like late 80s, early 90s. So I do tend to go back and watch some of the 80s ones that I haven't seen before. Like I've never seen any of the Child's Play movies. So I may watch those.
Yeah, let's bring those in.
Yeah. I watched Evil Dead 2 recently. I watched House on Haunted Hill, the original with Vincent Price last year, thinking about the older classics. So,
of course, you would only get the first Child's Play for your podcast.
Yeah, because the first one came out in 89. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys, so much for being a part. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be sure to follow, subscribe, rate, and review the show. Support the show through buymeacoffee.com. Buy a T-shirt or a sweatshirt from the website, even though by the time this comes out, Halloween will be pretty almost over. But we did have some cool Halloween or fall-inspired shirts, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street.
They are horror movie inspired, and that is any time of the year.
Exactly. Yeah. There was a guy wearing a Halloween t-shirt about 3 months ago. So you wear it all year round. So go check those out. You can find it on tpublic.com. You'll search for 80s flick flashback written out, not the number 8080, but actually written out for tpublic.com. Or you go to our website. It's easier that way. Email us at info@80sflickflashback.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone who loves 80s movies. And of course, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and the TikTok. Thanks, guys, so much for joining me. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim Williams for the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. Good night, good people. Happy Halloween.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.